Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructor Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by my co-host, Michael.
What's up?
We are live doing our top 25 cards for Omanket set review, and we are excited. So let's get right into this. We'll start with the way we always start, giving our shout out to our patrons. We have some new patrons this week we're really excited about. So shout out to Nick and Easton, our two newest patrons. You know, two different Nicks. They are also both Nick S. So good week for Nick S to join the show as a patron. Shout out to both of you, as well as Easton. You know, we really do appreciate everything that comes in. It really does mean the world to us, and we just want to give you guys a quick shout out. This week, we're doing the top 25 card set review. So we actually allow patrons of the show to submit their top 25 cards for the set, and then we do a set review on the cards, giving them rankings according to those things, just like an AP poll. So if you rank the card at 1, it gets 25 points. If you rank the card at 25, it gets 1 point, and it just kind of converges from there. So we're really excited about the set review this week, and we're just going to get right into it. Our sponsor. So don't forget to share our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. They're the best place to buy Magic singles. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout, and you can get 5% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good. So amazing place to buy Magic cards, and we highly recommend them. And Michael works there, so.
Yeah. So, you know, that means that I probably won't personally be packing your order, but I may well be there while someone is. So
well, let's get right into this. So we're gonna start with the card. We're just gonna read the cards as they're listed here. So coming in at number 25 for cards in Omanket, we have Glyph Keeper. This card is 3 blue for a creature Sphinx. It has flying. It's a 5/3, and then whenever it becomes the target of a spell or ability for the first time each turn, counter that spell or ability. And then it has embalm for 5. So you can, if it's in your graveyard, you can put token into play of it. That is, I believe, white and a zombie. Yeah. For 5.
Yeah. So embalm is kind of interesting on this style of card, but I'm a little ambivalent about a 5/3 in Kirin.
And yeah, I mean, Heart of Kirin definitely is a lot of stats for not a lot of mana, and this card is it's like decent stats for its rate. And in a world of vehicles, like sometimes those stats just don't add up very well. I would actually think this card is we should go over ratings as well. So we are switching to a similar rating system to limited resources as requested by the listeners. So let me kind of break it down for you really quick. So A, which is the best grade a card can get, or A+, is going to be a multi-format all-star for us. So that means cards that are going to see play in multiple formats and have a huge impact on Magic the Gathering. Deathrite Shaman, Jace the Mind Sculptor, those kind of cards. A is also for cards that define a metagame. So even though, while Jace the Mind Sculptor and Deathrite Shaman are going to be these A+ cards, cards like Elspeth Sun's Champion, they're also A's. They are cards that define a metagame of Standard, similar to Gideon, Ally of Zendikar. B's are going to be cards that you want to build the decks around. These are cards that in Standard you are incentivized to play 4 copies of, or the strategy is built behind them. If you think about cards like Dominary Raid is probably like a B+, stuff like that. Bloodbraid Elf is probably an A. Burning Shrimisery is a good solid B card. C's are going to be your typical cards, just cards that make up most Magic decks. You know, Think Twice is a pretty good example of a C. And then D's are going to be cards that we don't think are going to be very good. They're not going to see play. We might not get a lot of D's because this is a top 25 list, and then F's are obviously unplayable. We also have cards for sideboard and combo, meaning that these cards are going to see play probably in a sideboard. They have a good slot there. And then combo cards are cards that we see. They're either going to be an A or an F, right? They're either going to make up the format, or they're just not going to be a part of it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting things about doing a set review in this way, where we're asking for input from others. It's pretty clear looking at people's lists that not everyone is grading cards on quite the same metric when it comes to like combo style cards, things that are either going to be great or things that are going to be pretty poor. So it's an interesting list.
Yeah. So let's go with Glyphkeeper and kind of what we think of that. I would put this card in the sideboard category. I think that if this card sees play, it's going to mostly see play as a sideboard card out of control decks in the mirror once Sphinx of the Final Word is gone. And I'm pretty sure Sphinx of the Final Word was supposed to be gone when this card was printed anyway.
This feels more like just a D or a D minus to me. I just don't think this effect is very powerful on a creature that's going to have so many issues dying in combat.
I could see it being the thing that people choose to do once Sphinx of the Final Word has gone in those as that like one of to two of in the control mirror for blue decks. So
it's possible. This kind of effect, though, like not having any sort of uncounterability is really a problem.
That's true. That is a problem. But it also costs less mana, right? We're seeing the Final Word and Pearllink Ancient, you know, they were really expensive, and this card is on the cheaper end, so it could fit into that slot where you can leave up Negator to spell.
Definitely, definitely. If this card sees play, I think costing 5 will be pretty critical.
Yeah. Coming in next with, is that 21 points? We have Harvest.
Yes.
Harvest Season.
This is kind of a cool one. Harvest Season is a card for 2 and a green that says it's a sorcery. It says search your library for up to X basic land cards, where X is the number of tapped creatures you control, and put those cards onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library.
Yeah. So I saw this card and was like, what? Like, there are shenanigans to be had with this card. And Michael, I think it might speak to you a little bit.
I really like this card, specifically with Cryptolith, right? Which is, you know, one that I can't get away from. I just
always
kind of kicking around in the back of my head. Yeah. So this is kind of a weird one. It feels like the kind of card where it definitely doesn't fit in every deck, but the deck building cost maybe isn't as high as you'd think it would be. And even more than like low deck building cost, it feels like some of the upside is pretty crazy. Like if you're getting like 2 or 3 lands off this, even semi-regularly, you don't even have to cast it on 3 for it to be good. Depends on the mana sinks you have available.
Honestly, I would give this card kind of a combo rating rather than like an actual grade, because it's either going to be really good, it's going to be an F. Like, I don't see a situation where you're like playing this card, especially without like, I don't see a situation where this card is not either broken or unplayable. And it is the first one of this effect that's this conditional land search that they've printed that I'm like, oh, okay, this is something. Because most of the other ones that they've done, you know, like what was like the one that was an X spell? Like,
oh yeah, like Animist's Awakening, where it was,
yeah, it's these cards are not as good. Like, I don't see it, where with this card I'm like, oh, okay, like this could actually like kill your opponent and like okay, well, turn 5, right. turn 5 they're dead, like, and that's pretty powerful.
I mean, if you're like Loam Dryad into 2-drop into other guy, tap my, you know, other 1-drop, well, like, tap my guys, cast this, you're like, you know, close to casting an Ulamog or something.
Right, exactly. It and especially in combination with Cryptolith, right? It's pretty powerful.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you really only need to cast one of these to be in the 10, 11 mana range, where maybe not 10 or 11, but with Cryptolith, right, specifically, you're going to be at about 10 or 11. And it's getting to the point where it's like, it ramps so much, I'm almost not sure what I want to do with that much mana.
Yeah.
It might just be that it's, if this card is bad, I think it'll be that it's slightly too conditional and it ends up sort of being over restrictive and over ramping you.
Yeah. Jared in chat points out that Embalm is uncounterable. And while that is technically true, the two counter spells that control decks are playing, Void Shatter and the one that counters abilities,
and
both
disallow,
of them,
right.
And disallow, they both actually do stop it. So,
right. So Void Shatter preemptively, right? I mean, yeah.
So Magma Spray is next on our list. This card comes in with 21 points, and a lot of people are praising Wizards of the Coast for this coming back. Card costs one red. It's an instant, and it deals 2 damage to target creature. And if a creature's controller, if a creature that was dealt damage with this would die, exile it instead. And for obvious reasons, people love this card because of Scrap Heap Scrounger.
Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of decks that this card makes a lot of sense in. Like, there are a lot of decks where you might have wanted a shock style effect, but maybe weren't going to the face very often. And certainly out of the sideboard, this is going to see play. I would give this like a solid.
I give it like a
really
C.
Good filler. Yeah, it's a C, but a C is like pretty good on this style effect because it's just not quite splashy or powerful enough for it to be higher than that, right?
Yeah, I've played. I actually qualified for the Pro Tour with Magma Spray in my deck. I've played the card before. It's nothing flashy, but it's like what I need when I need it, and that's important.
Yeah, in decks that like are looking for sort of curve filler, like a shock style card, but are not really aggressive enough for the 2 to the face to matter, this kind of card is really welcome. Because those kind of decks have also recently sort of been terrorized by Scrap Heap Scrounger. So I think this card is just like really solid.
Yeah, what style of decks are you thinking for this? Just like Jeskai Control, Jund, like where, just controlling decks?
I think anything that's just a little slower, any red deck where your primary focus isn't getting your opponent dead as quickly as possible, this is probably better than Shock.
Okay.
Scrounger, I think, is the big one, but it also, like, if they already have a Scrounger in their graveyard, you can kill a small creature without giving that Scrounger fodder. I mean, there's all kinds of, like...
That new 2/2 for 2 that embalms, that can block as many creatures as you want, I think that card's also pretty good.
Yeah, and it gets rid of that. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so up next, we have Glorious End. This card is 2 and a red for an instant end of, and it says end of the turn. At the beginning of your next end step, you lose the game. So for those who don't know, when you end the turn and it, you know, stops all spells on the stack, you know, damage doesn't happen, like damage wears off your creatures, everything, just the turn is over. Yeah, what?
Again, this is a funny one, isn't it? This is either an A or an F, right?
I'm actually going to go out on a limb and say this is an F. I thought about this card a lot when it was spoiled, like a lot. And I don't think that you can, like, the best thing I've heard of is Gideon. And I just don't think that's good enough.
I don't think it is either. I think Gideon doesn't quite go in the decks that you'd like this in. My impression of Gideon is that he maybe works a little bit better in a controlling shell where the plus is better. And in those shells, I think I'm less interested in a time stop effect.
Very interesting. I have played Gideon in aggro decks so far, and he's been pretty okay in my initial.
I certainly don't think he's terrible in that kind of shell. He just feels a lot more like Gideon Jura.
When you say that, you mean he feels like it in those decks, or he just feels like it in general?
Just kind of in general. Just like I mean, just the same way that like you would be able to use Gideon to force your opponent to attack him and kind of between a little bit of spot removal.
And so you're kind of looking for it with Gideon, but we can actually wait till we get to Gideon to talk about all of this.
Yeah,
let's continue on Glorious End. So you're saying you want to give it like a combo rating.
I'm with you that I would combo rating leaning towards F.
Yeah. I'm just going to say that Glorious End probably deserves an F. I don't see a situation where this card could be rated. But if your specs, if you are people who spec out there, when we do set reviews, oftentimes we miss on one card really big. And I don't know. It's a myth.
Maybe.
A prayer.
So with cards like this, I generally trust Wizards to get it right. Because this kind of card is so problematic if you are wrong about how good it is, that I would be pretty surprised if this one ended up being very good.
Is there any applications outside of Standard that you could see this card seeing play in?
I tried to think about that some, but I couldn't really come up with anything where it seemed like a lot better than what we already have. What about you?
I couldn't think of anything. I'm
Yeah,
also,
I.
I don't think I'm the target player for this card, so.
Yeah, so it is cool. It is a cool card, but I don't know that Final Fortune is, a format breaker.
Yeah.
Could
Up
be wrong.
next, we have Cut Ribbons. This card is a split card with Aftermath. It on the front side, on the top side, I should say. It is red and one to deal target creature 4 damage at sorcery speed. And then it has Ribbons, which is black X, sorcery Aftermath, so it can only be cast from your graveyard. And then each opponent loses X life. So when I initially read this card, I thought it was a drain life. And I was like, this card is nutso.
Yeah, so it's not a drain life,
That's too
and
bad.
I'm not quite sure exactly where I want this, but I think this card
Really?
is the kind of card that, like, it's just good enough on rate that
Oh man,
it's going to be
I
a
want this
playable
card
now.
in so many decks. Like, I want this card in red black aggro out of the sideboard. I want this card in Jund decks. I want this card in Grixis decks. Like, I want this card in a lot of decks. It's like this nice two of to put in your deck. I would give this card like a C plus, maybe a B minus. I think this card is like the your deck changes because this card exists, right? You might add color, like you might be like, you know what? In this, I can splash red in this green black deck for this cut. Like, this solves a lot of my problems, and I am willing to change my deck because of this card.
I think this card is, I don't like it as much as you, clearly, but I think it's solid. It's this leans more like C to high C to me.
Okay.
But you end up with this card where, like, it's always the removal spell, it depends a lot on how many vehicles you're playing against, right? Like, that style of removal spell was
Right,
better
but
in the pa in the In the
vehicles won't be in standard
past.
forever.
Sure, but so I'm evaluating this in the context of this next format.
That's true, but that you can't always do that for cards, right? That's how you miss out. Like that's how formats get broken, right? Is cards rotate out, people don't realize the cards that like were already there, and they build their decks, they go to Gatherer and they search for an effect that they want, and if the effect fits the deck, I mean that's gonna make your deck way better. And I think this one will see play with vehicles and might see even more play without them.
Yeah, I think this card is totally reasonable. It's just gonna feel bad against Heart of Kirin.
Yeah,
Shocking turn of events.
that's true. But something that you can think about though is like let's say you're building some kind of Grixis control Drakehaven deck, right? I probably want some number of these on a split with grass because it's easier to cast anyway, and not every deck's gonna have vehicles, right?
Right. So what I would say is the first one of these has quite a bit of value, and then every additional copy of it you draw, the value drops off pretty dramatically.
Oh, I actually agree with that because it's not very reasonable that you're going to have turns where you can use the Aftermath side back to back, right?
Right, you're not going to have like turn 8 6 U, turn 9 7 U, turn 10 8 U,
Well,
right?
yeah, and one of the huge reasons, and that's actually important because when I thought that it was a drain life, I was like, you can do that, right? Like
Sure.
you that like that could be just be your game plan. You just kill their guys, drain life you, go drain life you, and they're like, well, I mean, yeah. And that's probably why it's not a train light.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that it's like a totally reasonable card. I just am not sure how many copies of this effect I want.
Yeah. So you're going C, C plus, I'm going C plus, B minus.
Sure. And I mean, I guess ultimately that's not really that different. It's
No,
mostly
I mean, and I think that we often.
sort of how we state the same thing, right?
Yeah, and I think that oftentimes the conversation is just as important as, I mean, even when we were doing number grades, like, it was like, listen, like, when we talk about the cards, like, we're saying where we see the cards, right? Like,
Right.
the
No,
difference.
and I mean I remember both of us ending up changing our minds anyways.
Yeah.
Someone else says something about a card and you're like, "Oh, that is cool. Okay."
And if you think about it this way, like, in school, like, a D is 60%, right? So like we're arguing over like minute decimal points when we're talking about cards. So Sweltering Suns is next. Do you want to read that one?
Yeah, Sweltering Suns is a sorcery. It costs 1 and 2 red, so 1 red, and it deals 3 damage to each creature. It also has cycling for 3 colorless.
So I would play this card without cycling.
It would be like kind of.
I think it would
on
be
on the bottom end of what you'd be happy to play.
I would still be there were formats where I was playing red to deal 2 damage out of the sideboard.
Right. No, and it's totally true
to non-flyers. It didn't even hit flyers.
This card will just see play by virtue of being sort of Radiant Flames-esque, right? Yeah. Like, that style of card just is always...
Yeah.
Fine.
I think this card is in some ways better, obviously, and in some ways worse. I mean, I don't want to say it's strictly better, but it almost feels strictly better. Like, the number of times where I cast Radiant Flames where I couldn't have constructed my deck a little bit differently to be able to cast this card when I wanted to is pretty low. There is that competition with Kozilek's Return. So, like, in some of the decks that I might be building, if Copycat Combo gets banned, I'll probably pick Kozilek's Return over this. But...
Sure. No, and that totally makes sense. But cycling is pretty real.
Yeah, being able to just say, like, oh, you know what? This isn't good in... Like, I've played a lot of matches with Drake decks already, with Drakehaven control decks. And, like, this having cycling is such a big deal. You're just like, not... Like, I don't need this in this matchup. Like...
Normally cycling 3 is like a lot, but when the card is only good against the decks, or is only not good rather against the decks that aren't pressuring you anyways,
right?
It's a lot less bad, I think, in terms of how it will play than how it looks on the card.
And on the flip side of that, if you think about the matchups where it is good, it's often going to be one of the best cards in your deck.
Right. So having a bunch of other... Right, so you're what you're saying is you're not. There are plenty of matchups where you're just basically never cycling it, and in the matchups where you are cycling it, it's not taxed as heavily.
Right, exactly. So it has this nice balance of being like let's say that you are digging for a land, right? Like this isn't gonna be the second card you're cycling in the matchups where it's good, and in the matchups where it's good, it's gonna be the best card in your deck. So it's like it's almost like a perfect design in my head where it's like it just says. Well, I don't need you, and I'm not going to be casting a spell at the end of my opponent's turn, so let's try and dig for another counter spell. Where on the flip side, it's like, this is the best card in my deck, so I'm never going to be cycling it, so the cycling cost doesn't matter.
Right. That makes sense. My big concern with this is just like sorcery speed versus vehicles. That's kind of an interesting tension, and I think that... More than anything, it's going to sort of take metagame shakeout to figure out how playable this style of effect really is.
Yeah, I would still give this card a B. I think it's something that maybe a B minus. It's just something that's like going to be important in the format that this card exists.
Yeah, I think that much like Radiant Flames, it's not even always that this card is actually seeing a huge amount of play as much as it is the fact that the card in the format sort of limits what else you can do, right? Like playing a huge amount of one drops or whatever, this right. Kind of puts a cap on that.
Yep. Soulscar Mage is next. It comes in with 41 points. So we're getting kind of bigger jumps here. Soulscar Mage is 1 red for a 1/2 human wizard with prowess. If a source you control would deal damage, non-combat damage to a creature an opponent controls, put that many -1/-1 counters on that creature instead. I've already playtested a ton with this card, and I just want to say up front that the fact that this and Shock exist in the same format makes this card really hard to block.
It's nice that you can play a bunch of burn that effectively plays like combat tricks in hands with this card. That's pretty powerful, and I think it's a relatively unique effect. I am a little ambivalent about this guy just because the stat ratio isn't as aggressive as maybe you wish it was. But I think this card is really solid, and I think especially if mono red specifically is good, this card will be good.
Yeah, that's the deck I've been playing it in. I would assume that you could easily fit it into like a similar red black shell. Honestly,
sure. Just talking about like damage focus versus destruction focus. That's all.
I think this card is like really good, and I'm gonna give this card a B, like a solid. You build your deck because this, like, you build your deck differently because this card exists. I honestly, when I first saw this card, I was like, it has a lot of words on it. It has a stat line. First of all, I was tricked by the haste version of this card called?
Monastery Swift Spear.
Yeah, I didn't think Monastery Swift Spear was going to be playable, right? And I just fell for it. I don't know what I was thinking. And I think this card is just good. Like, they didn't want to make another Monastery Swift Spear like in Modern, right? And this card is definitely not good enough for Modern play. But I definitely do think this card is good enough for multiple decks in Standard. And like blue red spell, like burn kind of decks, as well as mono red and red black style aggro decks. And I've heard people talk about this in like Boros decks. I do think that both the cartouche, the white and the red cartouche with this card, are really good because they pump it while also giving it additional stats later, so it keeps it a real card. But I think the mana is too bad in Boros, so maybe that changes. Maybe they give us more red white lands or like a pain land that does all colors or something like that. But until the mana is better, I don't see that deck really working out for it.
Yeah, we tried a bunch of red-white decks, and you really need the density of fast lands that Mardu gives you. Like, I actually think Mardu just has better mana than red-white somehow. Which,
especially when you splash blue for awkward. Four colors.
Sure, you just need to play more non-basics. That's really the problem. But, yeah, Needle Spires is super awkward, so I am with you there. Yeah, I feel like this one definitely has potential. This makes me a lot more comfortable playing a bunch of shocks in my aggro deck, where otherwise I worry about kind of scalability and drawing multiples in the same game.
Sure.
But you're definitely right. The combination of prowess and then sort of wither for your spells is pretty powerful. So I could see this one being like a B as well. This is a card that I expect if you want it, you'll be playing four of.
Absolutely.
And that also leads me in that direction as far as like what letter grade it's getting, right? Because some of these other ones, like Cut to Ribbons, could be very good, but I just don't think it's a card that you're ever really going to play four of. No,
it's definitely just like in that two of range, right? Because you can't afford to play that many Cut Ribbons, whereas this, like, you're enticed to play as many as you possibly can.
Right, because if this effect is good in your deck, you really want it.
Yeah. Okay, so we're both landing about B on Soulscar Mage. Up next, we have... I'm not even going to try.
Oketra the True, which is 3 and a white for a legendary creature god. Double strike and indestructible. Oketra the True cannot attack or block unless you control at least 3 other creatures. 3 and a white, create a 1/1 white warrior creature token with vigilance, and Oketra is a 3/6.
I'm going to be wrong, man, but I'm giving this card an F.
I am too.
I don't see... Like, you are so punished for playing this style of card, right? And people tried really hard with Heliod, and honestly, this reminds me so much of Heliod. What can we pull up Heliod? I actually want to know. Heliod, is he God of the Sun? Is
that God what of the Sun? Yeah, I'll pull it up. It says. Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's a 5/6 for 4 indestructible. As long as your devotion to white is less than 5.
Can you hold on for a second?
Yeah.
So Heliod is a 5/6, so he gets his power up front and gets one less damage in when he attacks. So keep going.
Other creatures you control have vigilance. 4 mana, put a 2/1 white cleric enchantment creature token on the battlefield.
So for the same amount of mana, you get a bigger creature. The creature already has vigilance because Heliod's in play. Devotion is, I think, easier to get than three separate creatures. Like, I think this card is basically
kind of sixes, right?
Yeah, it depends. The difference here is that her activated ability activates her and Heliod's didn't. I zero, man. Like, F, I can't.
I think for me to actually play this card, it would have to be like a 7/6 double strike. If it was like a 7/6. No, if it was just the same card, but like a 7/6.
That's like so big.
Yeah, I think that's about what it would take, though, because you're basically building a deck that says I can never beat the card like Wrath of God or Fumigate or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
It incentivizes you to play that solid deck, right? And I don't think that is ever good.
Yeah, I don't think that this is where I want to be starting in this format or ending up. So I am going to agree with you on that one. What's up next?
A poll from tomorrow comes in at 17th with 42 points. Poll from tomorrow is an instant for X blue blue. Draw X cards, then discard a card.
So I've had a lot of conversations with people, and I want to explain something that I don't think people quite understand. Because they're like, well, you get one less card than Sphinx of Revelation. That's actually not true. You actually get the same number of cards when you, like, per turn.
Right. Total mana.
Yeah, per total mana. So if you think about it, you're paying one more for Sphinx of Revelation, and you're drawing flat cards and you don't have to discard. You're paying one less for this, and you have to discard, right?
I mean, you're actually getting, it's almost strictly better on that side because you discard the worst card, right?
So yeah, so I'm gonna kind of give you situations here. So I'm gonna pay five, I'm gonna draw two, discard zero, gain two life with Sphinx's Rev. Okay, that's not that good. With this, you're drawing three, discarding one. That's actually a real thing I would do for five mana a lot of the time. Like in situations where I'm like digging for an answer. We go up one mana, draw three, gain three. Sphinx's Rev is pretty good. You're drawing four, discarding one. Like if the life gain doesn't matter, just better, right? And what will happen is as we go up this chain, what will happen is as long as the life gain doesn't matter, Pull from Tomorrow is always going to be better. If the life gain does matter, Sphinx's Rev will be better. But at lower mana cost, Pull from Tomorrow is better than Sphinx's Revelation.
Right. The flip side is that it gets dramatically worse at higher mana costs.
Well,
and is maybe still not an especially great card at the lower mana costs. That's kind of the question, right?
I don't know. So Blue Sun Zenith saw play. Sphinx's Revelation saw play. Is it blue two? What is it? Stroke of Genius?
Uh-huh.
Stop play. Like, they're all seeing play. I think that this card is a very reasonable two of in a lot of control style decks.
Yes. Like, I like that distinction. What I would say is that it's less good in multiples.
Oh, yeah.
Sphinx's Revelation allowed you to spend multiple turns sort of drawing cards and doing nothing. This card distinctly does not allow you to do that.
It kind of is the same thing that we kind of talk about with Cut Ribbons, right? Where if it had been a drain life on the ribbon side, it's like, well, yeah, I'll play a ton of these. Like, it's a win condition that's like keeping me from losing the game. That's great. And that's kind of what Sphinx's Revelation was doing. This card is not that, right? It's going to be closer to like the Blue Sun Zenith area where you're like, no, I'll play one or two of these.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think that this card is like a really safe bet to see play. I just don't know that this is ever a card that's going to be like, this is not the kind of card that feels like it's ever going to seem broken.
Yeah, I would give this card a C+ or a B-.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Like, it's just, if, you know, if you had to bet on which cards would see at least like one copy in a Pro Tour Top 16, this would be really high on my list.
Yes.
If you were asking me what card I want to play, you know, four copies of ever, this card is not even close to the list. And I think that kind of a C+, B- is.
Coming in 16th place, I'm shocked that this card is this low. We have Glorybringer. Okay, so what? Okay, Glorybringer is red. I didn't mean to pull it up. It's red 3 for a 4/4 flying haste dragon. And then it has exert, and when you exert it, you can deal 4 damage to creature defending player controls. Oh yeah, no, it's so, not even that. It's an opponent, so it's better than that. Not in like Archon decks, but
hypothetically.
Yeah. This card is like really good. Like, what? Why does Stormbreath Dragon suddenly kill things?
Yeah, or at least can. I mean, the main thing is, like, if you happen to have something that gives vigilance, that's obviously great. But...
Oh, that seems annoying.
I mean, right? Because then you can just actually exert...
Every turn,
and it's kind of oppressive. But even without something that's doing that, just... This kind of creature is almost as like every variant of this they've printed has been pretty good.
Stormbreath Dragon, Sarkid Dragon Speaker, Thundermount Hawkeye. They've all seen play. Like this card is an A. Like this card could possibly define standard once certain things happen. Like there is a world where this card could be the defining card in standard.
Yeah, I think this is maybe a little bit closer to Thunderbreak region, just total power level wise.
Oh, that card's unplayable, so don't say that.
Well, if you're halfway between a card that's great and a card that is, you know, saw play but wasn't great, I don't know that I go A, but this feels like I'm definitely playing four of in a deck that wants it, and I think a deck that wants it is likely to be very good. So I would go like B plus A minus. I'm not, you know, Elspeth Sun's Champion on this card, but
I don't know, man. Like
it's powerful.
I think it's better than Sarkid Dragon Speaker, and that card was a constant two of. And I think that like that was because of him being a planeswalker, right? Where this is like I want to draw my second and third of this, right?
Yeah, that's the other thing I was actually going to say. This is one of the rare like five drops where multiples are maybe not only just okay, but actively good.
Yeah.
That's pretty unusual. I what I'm saying mainly is I could see this card being squeezed out in certain formats.
Yeah.
Like, it depends on what people are playing.
In a format with Avacyn, it's probably not that great. But Avacyn's not going to be with it forever. And when that change happens, this card is like... This is how formats get defined. Is like, well, I can't play this 5-mana X4 because it's gonna die when my opponent untaps.
Right. I it feels like it definitely slots into some similar territory, perhaps, as like Ishkana. Maybe a little worse than that, but
I think
like,
it's better than that.
This thing is good.
Yeah.
In the format, it's like it. The cost is totally reasonable, right? You're not playing this card because the cost doesn't work. If you're not playing this card, it's because it doesn't make sense based on what other people are playing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what you're paying for, you're getting a deal.
Yep, I think I actually had this card as my number one card in the set. So, let's go on to the next card. What do we have next?
Let's see. We have Curator of Mysteries at 15th with 47 points. Curator of Mysteries is a 4/4 flying for 2/2 blue that cycles for a blue and says whenever you cycle or is it just cycle or whenever you cycle or discard?
I think it's cycle or discard, if I'm not mistaken.
You can scry one.
Yep. Whenever you cycle or discard another card, it's just scry one. It's not a May.
Okay.
Okay, so really high on this card when I first saw it. I have since played probably 20 games with it in my deck, and I am less and less impressed the longer I play games with it.
What have you not liked about it?
I almost always am cycling it. Because here's the thing, like, Magic ain't what it used to be, and a 4/4 flyer for 4 is honestly just not that good. With that just being kind of its base. And like Cycle Blue, while very good, is it's attached to kind of a, in my opinion, a kind of a crappy creature. And which is really sad because, like, I was really excited. Like, I could play 4/4 flyers for 4. I was like, yeah, that's going to be great. And then, like, my opponent plays a Hazoret, and I'm like, well, I have to block. So nice 4-mana, gain 5 life.
Yeah, I think this card just falls into awkward territory where it's like, it's close to being good on rate, and its ability is close to being good. But yeah. Scrying one when you cycle is like,
it turns it into a real card.
Sure, but you need such a high density of cycling cards for that to really be a relevant ability. So you're right. Basically at that point saying, okay, I need the body to be relevant. It in blue decks, there are all these 3-mana counter spells, which are sort of the staple of how blue decks are being built right now. Like, I'm more interested in this guy, like, in a deck with 2-mana mana dorks than I am with him in pure control.
So here's what happened in my testing, to give you an idea, is I obviously can't just jam this guy on 4 because I want to be developing my game plan, countering stuff, right?
Right, but if you're not jamming him on 4, he's fighting with Torrential, right?
And then that's exactly what happened, is like, I'm getting to like 7 mana. I'm like, well, I'm not going to cast this. I have a Torrential Gearhulk in my hand.
Right, and it sort of depends on what other people are doing, right? If the other decks are also just play guy decks, then this guy is probably pretty decent.
Right.
But if the other decks are doing things that are like fundamentally better than just playing on curve creatures, right? Yeah. I mean, if I can't trade this guy for your Heart of Kirin because you have a veteran motorist, I'd feel pretty stupid.
Yeah, I could still see this seeing play, and, you know, I mean, if the Drakehaven deck exists, this card's going to see play in it, and I would give this card, like, a C still.
Yeah, it's not bad, right? I mean, like, fundamentally, a 4/4/4/4 that just cycles for 1 has sort of a floor on how bad it can be, but this can be the kind of card that is just never quite
correct to play. Because of the way they do standard rotation now, this will always be with Kaladesh, right?
I think so.
Yeah, that's really bad for this card.
You think what card in particular? You think with just
Torrential Gearhulk versus this is like a losing battle for this card.
Well, that's why I was saying I think this maybe has to be in a deck that is casting it more as like a guy.
Yeah.
Like, you would need a style of deck where cycling was really valuable and you needed more bodies specifically.
There would certainly be matchups where you'd want like a 4/4 flyer for 4. And in those matchups, this card would probably shine pretty well. And I did mention like a Hazoret example, and like that's kind of when this card is at its worst in that matchup. Whereas other times, like playing a 4/4 flyer for 4 is going to be, or just a 4/4 and 4/4 in general, is going to be really hard for like low to the ground aggro decks to beat. So yeah, C plus maybe it's fine.
And it lines up poorly against Gideon on the draw, but it lines up pretty well on the play a lot of the games, I would think. Like, yeah. It's certainly not terrible, but I think in the C range is about right.
Yeah. What do we have next?
We have Vizier of the Menagerie. That is a creature. It is a green creature. It is 3 and a green for a 3/4 that says you can look at the top card of your library. And if it is a creature, you can cast it. And you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast creatures.
Yeah, so this is the kind of card that in the right formats is like a format staple. And in the wrong formats, it just won't see play. Currently, we are in the wrong format for this card. I don't know that that will always be true, though. There are going to be, I suspect, because of a lot of things. First of all, I don't think you spend money on that art for a card that you don't want to be good. No, she's serious.
That's what I like to hear.
It's true.
It like, is sweet, though. Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with you.
Two, effects like this in the past have just been powerful enough to really occupy a huge space in standard. You can think Oracle of Moldiah. You can think...
Yeah, it's like Oracle Cruiser, baby.
Yeah.
Or Courser, baby, whatever.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Like, I can't think of a card in green that had this effect other than Garruk's Horde. And that card costs 7 mana.
No, like, this is not... The only way that this is expensive... is that it costs 4 straight up, but you're also getting a 3/4 with it. Like,
yeah,
you could die to someone just, it's not legendary, is it?
No.
I mean, you could die to someone like top decking one of these and having another one on top of their deck and just being like, yeah, Vizier, Vizier, 6U, 6U, 6U. Okay, we did it.
Yeah, I this card's, it's probably a B. It's probably, it might, there are going to be formats where this is like a B plus A. I'm going to give it a B plus. I think it's really good. I don't think this is the format for it, but like just on a, like, just in a vacuum, it's just, it's really good.
Yeah, I think this one's kind of powerful. This is one I also wanted to try a little bit with, like, Cryptolith, right, potentially.
Of course.
You can do some pretty gross stuff with, you know, something that incentivizes you to play a bunch of creatures. It is awkward that it gets eaten by Glorybringer. This is the kind of creature where you're like, sure, I'll keep my 4/4 right? tapped. Yeah.
It's like...
Right? Like, if you have to kill your opponent's, like, I don't know, Toolcraft Exemplar or whatever,
I'm so excited for the green-red, like, rampy style decks with the 3/4 and the Glorybringer mirrors. Those are going to be so fun. Like, yeah, the mid-range green-red decks.
When you do one better than top deck it and actually, like, top deck it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I
don't even you're like, draw it. You're I like, draw a card for the turn. There's a, then you're like, oh, there's a Glorybringer on top of my deck. And you have one on top of your deck and don't have the mana for it. Well, I'm going to like, man.
No, you're going to like draw a card for the turn. Look at the top card of my deck. Cycle a cycling land. Look at the top card of my deck. Oh, Glorybringer kill you. Great. We did it.
Yeah. So where are you rating this card?
I like this one a lot. I probably have this one as like us, but it's like you said, there are times where this card is just going to be bad, and like when you play this and your opponent plays Gideon, it's going to look pretty stupid.
Can you imagine if this had that extra line of text, like Course of Crucifix, gain a life for each creature? It's like,
sure, you just be like, yeah, nice Gideon, whatever.
Yeah,
it'd be one drop.
All right, so up next we have As Foretold. This card is 2 and a blue for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a time counter on As Foretold. Once each turn, you may pay 0 rather than pay the mana cost for a spell you cast with converted mana cost X or less, where X is the number of time counters on As Foretold.
Yeah, so like this is one of those cards that is just like basically a straight combo rating, right?
Yeah, this card comes in 13th place with, I mean, it's when this card was spoiled, people were like, why? Why would you print this?
And yeah, it got as many as 23 points and as few as 0. So
here's the thing, is that either this card is like broken, because it literally says, you stop printing things that make cards free. When has that ever worked out?
Yeah, well, it's just, it's like...
Who do they appeal to?
It's like
to
they're either... Right? Well, I think this is like way more interesting as a modern card. I don't know that there's anything you can do with this in standard, but...
Well, absolutely not. That's obviously where it's going to get broken, but like, do you want them to... They just made modern decent. I don't need this.
Well... You're telling me you don't want to cast Ancestral Vision and then like obviously, play out some of your hand and then play Restore Balance for free a couple turns later?
I don't get why this card exists.
I don't like, really either. It's just not fun. It's either bad or not fun.
I don't remember what I think it was, like there was a podcast, I think. I don't know. I know that Casey and I want to do a sports podcast called How Is That a Stat? And I think that there might have been a segment on a Magic podcast that was like, how is that a card, right? Where it's like, you read the card and you're just like, how is that a card? Why does like, that need to exist?
Who said okay to this? Yeah.
Yeah. Who, you know this happened in like a brainstorm meeting, right? Like I work in product. I know how this works. Is you got this Timmy player, this Spike player, and this Johnny player all in the same room designing a card together, and the Spike player got the better of them because he made them think this would be really fun.
Yeah. And what's true is that this card is either terrible or
not fun. Or not fun whatsoever.
It's guaranteed to be no fun because either it's unplayable or stupid. Those are the only options. Right.
And here's the thing, is that you're going to get those people that are like, well, fun is one-sided, right? Like, I could be having all of the fun. And are you really having that much fun?
Well, the problem is your opponent's going to, if it's really, really fun, your opponent is going to be doing it to you in every game too, right? I mean, like,
and then the games get even less fun. Then nobody's having fun. No fun was had.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I gave this card a combo rating, and I, like, seriously, Wizards, come on.
Yeah, really? This one just seems stupid.
All right, up next,
I don't get it.
Whatever. We have Harsh Mentor coming in next, coming in 12th place. What does that card do?
Harsh Mentor is one in a red for a 2/2, and it says whenever an opponent activates an ability of an artifact, creature, or land on the battlefield, if it isn't a mana ability, Harsh Mentor deals 2 damage to that player.
Okay. Why is that a card?
Because they really thought that Burn needed a bad version of Eidolon.
Is it a bad version? Isn't it better in some matchups?
Probably not.
I think it probably is, right? Like, good luck activating your top against this card, like, ever?
Sure. I mean, if your opponent just, like, can't remove it. But, I mean, Sensei's Divining Top is not a modern legal card, and it's pretty clear they don't design things with Legacy in mind.
Yeah,
I think this card is okay, but I think it might end up being kind of underwhelming compared to where people have pegged it.
Well, I think it's just a sideboard card, but I just don't think it needed to exist.
So my biggest issue with this card is that it's dramatically better on the play than the draw.
That's true.
Where Eidolon, like, your opponent is going to have to answer your board eventually, so a lot of the time it ends up just being like, well, you had to kill Eidolon, and it hit you once, and I cast a spell under it, but it also, you know, whatever, my life total doesn't matter, I'm playing Burn.
Right.
This card is, like, pretty good if you play it turn two on the play, and basically has no text otherwise.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm seeing you actually getting with this is Fetchlands.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it makes Fetchlands look really stupid.
Right, when your opponent, like, fetch shocks to kill this and is like, I guess I'll take 5.
There could be a world where this card doesn't see any play, but I think it's probably just good enough to maybe be like a one of in some kind of hate bear strategy or something, or just be a sideboard card for specific matchups where you want this. Like, this makes, for example, Affinity looks really stupid against this card.
It might be. It feels like a Burn sideboard card to me.
That's how I feel about it too. So,
but maybe a good one.
Yeah, it could be. It could
I
be
don't know.
Really good against Affinity, good against very specific decks. But yeah, that's kind of all I see it for. It all also.
It's not this is not a very fun card.
Yeah, I want to apologize to everybody. I forgot to shave today, and I didn't realize. Like, I didn't think about the fact that I was doing a live podcast. So I feel like I look, you know, ridiculous. So I apologize. Anyway, coming in 11th, we have Drakehaven. This comes in with 63 points. And Drakehaven, obviously, Michael, I'll let you read it since you're the one that's, you know, drooling over it.
That likes it. Drakehaven is an enchantment for 2 and a blue that says whenever you cycle or discard a card, you may pay 1. If you do, you get a 2/2 blue Drake.
I want to be clear that Noose Constrictor is still not playable.
Yeah, I don't think I want to play Noose Constrictor with this card.
Okay. I just assume that's why you were excited about it.
No, I think this card is just like an interesting sort of control.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit different than what we have available to us.
I've been practicing with or testing with a lot of different Drakehaven control decks. I've had this card as a 2/2. I've had this card as a 3/3. I don't think it's ever going to be a 4/4 in your deck just because if you draw a second one, they're really bad.
More like if you top deck one when you're trying to rip a cycler, right? It's...
Yeah, that's even worse.
Yeah, it's just kind of not what you're looking for.
But I think this card is probably... Here's the thing, is I think it is good enough. I don't know if this is the format for it, but I think this card is probably like a B-.
Yeah, I think of it like... It's like the control version of Whirler Virtuoso that you don't have to be so all-in on.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's like kind of a stupid analogy, but...
No, it's not. It makes a lot of sense, right?
It just, you don't. Yeah, it like provides value slowly over a couple of turns. You don't have to like build your whole deck around it to the extent I think people are thinking about it.
Yeah, I think that like the
Sensor cast out some cycling lands,
Yeah,
one other
the
card.
draw two dis the draw two instant speed, which by the way
Yeah.
is really, 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 really good with Torrential Gearhulk, in case anyone was wondering. I'm surprised it's not on this list.
Sure, just being able to cycle
Yeah, and then
to
flashback.
give yourself a better instant. Yeah, no,
Yeah.
that's very cute.
Yeah, I think this deck is this card is pretty good. Yeah, I'll give it a C plus.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it depends on. I think this card is a safe bet to see some play. I think it's probably unlikely to be like insanely dominant, but I like when control decks have a little more choice as to how they're trying to win games. And I
Yeah.
feel like there's at least a world in which this is, I don't know, not better than Torrential Gearhulk on power level, but different enough that it's worth playing.
Okay.
And I
I
think
actually,
that definitely has some merit, right?
from the decks that I've been playing with it in, and I started with non-Torrential Gearhulk decks, but the more I thought about the Hieroglyphic Illusion, what I don't know what the card is called.
Hieroglyphic Illumination, I believe.
Thank you, sir. I think that that card fits really well with Torrential Gearhulk, and I've been upping the Torrential Gearhulks and just kind of playing this as like another thing, right? Where like in some of the other Torrential Gearhulk decks, right? Like you'd play like Jace or Obsidian or gosh darn it, Obnixilus,
Omnixilis, yeah. Yeah, I think of
and
this a lot like that, right?
that's kind of how I think of it. It like fills that Planeswalker spot, right? Where it's getting you value throughout the game more than, and then eventually can become an overwhelming advantage more than anything else. So
But it
it
also, right, it also like, unlike those, being sort of a fluid mana cost has some upside too.
absolutely. And a cheap
Where like
mana
a lot,
cost
yeah.
to
A
for
lot of
this.
those times, well, right, but you can spend three and then like four on it, right? So it could be like a almost a seven drop that makes a couple of two twos immediately, or it can be a three drop, or it can be a five drop, or like it just kind of fits where you need it to on your curve. And I think especially in a world where like four color Saheeli exists, although that might no longer be the case in a few days. It's very valuable not to have a bunch of like fives in your deck.
Sure. Should we go? Should we move? Oh, you didn't give her a grade.
It's hard for me to give this an exact grade, but I think somewhere B minus C plus is
Up
about where I
next,
am.
we have Plague Belcher. This card is two and a black for a 5/4 zombie beast with menace. And when it enters the battlefield, put two minus one counters on target creature you control. Whenever another zombie dies, each opponent loses one life. I didn't have this card on my list. That's not to say it's not playable. I just didn't have it in the top 25 cards on the set.
I think it's a pretty interesting one. I think if I'm gonna play Blister Pod, I'm probably playing this in that deck. But I don't think it's terrible in like there basically if you have any sort of like Catacomb Sift or Blister Pod, anything that's making like an extra body, this is actually just a 5/4 menace for three.
Yeah, it's like too cute for me. That's probably why I don't see what other people see in it. Having it here on the rankings at number like in the top 10 feels really, really aggressive. I would give this card like a D plus.
Interesting. I think this could end up being like a B minus.
Oh, interesting.
I think that this is one where like it would take a certain kind of archetype being good, but I think this is really powerful. I think the zombies dying angle gives it some legs, and I think just straight on. I mean, there's the three and a black 3/2 that costs three less if something died this turn.
Yeah, I've seen people talking about that too. I don't see it. Like, here's the thing is that like I am a brewer, right? Like anybody who knows me know I brew decks all the time. It's what I do. But these aren't the kind of decks I brew. I don't get them. I don't understand them. I don't see magic that way, right? Where like I play
That's totally.
Yeah, I play magic as like an XYZ game and this is a Q and like it's just out of my realm. I don't see it.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I'm not quite sure exactly what I want it to look like, but I could see this in sort of a zombie tribal deck.
Yeah.
I could see this in like an aristocrat style deck.
I just don't think those decks are good right now, man. I don't think they've been good for a while.
I don't think
like,
they
even the deck that you won standard states with, that black green aristocrats deck, was that deck good?
It was for a brief window there before people had really good lists of green white. But okay. I think that like I don't know. I don't know. I think this card is certainly interesting. I haven't had a chance to explore some of these cards that are a little trickier to figure out how to build with.
You said to explore. Next up, we have Makelorn. Sorry, I couldn't resist. It's 2 and a green for a 2/2 beast. And when it enters the battlefield, you can destroy an artifact. Perfect. I do love Manic Vandal. I will play Manic Vandal. Also, opponents artifacts your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. I want to be very clear about something. I'm quite confident this card, this line of text did not get added to this card because of Copycat Combo. I'm pretty sure that this card went to print before Copycat Combo was oppressive.
Yeah. I think this card is, like, really okay.
Yeah, people are like, this is going to change standard. I'm like, it's a nice sideboard card. Sideboard grade.
Yeah. There, like, there sideboard could, 2 of grade.
Yeah, there could be a world in which you would main deck this card, but those aren't formats we want to be a part of, so...
Yeah, it's not a world I want to live in.
Yeah, I don't want to live in a world where Oxidize is main deckable, like, ever. That's not
I've been there, format. Done that. It's really not that fun.
It's not that great, guys, and I don't think we're even close to that right now. And
no.
Don't just go main deck and Manglehorns, guys.
This is mostly just Viridian Shaman, and that was a card that was only ever in main decks.
And Pod.
I was going to say when Affinity was the best deck in the format. You know, and there was the green-red deck that literally played Oxidize and Viridian Shaman and Arc Slogger and, like, Molder Slug main deck for, like, a 60-40 Affinity matchup. So, you know. Yeah. This card just doesn't, it's the definition of mediocre.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people being like, oh yeah, like you just play this in your black-green deck and suddenly it fixes your Saheeli combo matchup, and you just play this in red-green and suddenly it fixes your Saheeli combo matchup. I'm like, guys, there are decks with
people like, were playing Thalia already. Yeah. They kill it and then they kill you anyways.
People were playing Thalia and Shock works. In the same deck and we're still losing to that deck. It's nothing new. It's an effect that they have to get through, but their deck is built to get through it. So,
right.
I think this card's a sideboard card that I'll be happy to play in a lot of decks, but that's about it.
I don't even think it's an especially good sideboard card.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Man, the next card is sweet, though.
Channeler Initiate.
Yeah, go ahead and read that one.
It's a 3/4 for 2.
In. But,
you know, yeah. 1 and a green. When it enters the battlefield, put 3/-1/-1 counters on target creature you control. So, you know, they found the line. They added that line, you know, after it kept being, you know, a 3/4 for 2 that was also Necrotal. And then you can tap it and remove a 1/-1/-1 counter from it to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
Wait, were you like saying if it didn't say creature you control? Because that would be busted.
I'm joking. But yeah. Yes, that would indeed be powerful.
Would that be, that would be like modern playable, right? Like,
oh, it would be like one of the best cards in modern.
It might be one of the best cards ever. So like it could kill your opponent. It lightning bolts an opponent's creature. It can also be a mana dork, or it can be, I guess if you have to put -1/-1 counter somewhere. The card is interesting, but it's still probably broke. Anyway, that's not what the card does. So,
yeah, right. No, but this card is really good. Like, again, I like the idea of like if you have a certain kind of deck, it's possible sometimes that this will end up getting played in like the mid game as a 3/4 for 2. But mostly, this is just a mana dork that then after you use it a couple of times is like a real attacker.
Here's the thing, is how many, for Pro Tour Kaladesh, how many Servant of the Conduit decks did we have that were energy decks?
All of them,
like, basically. So many. And this card is just better than that. Like,
yeah, it is. And I mean, like, the fact that you're sometimes gonna, like, I don't know, you're, if you're playing it in a deck, like, we played some black green decks with like Catacomb Sifters, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's possible that there would be times where you'd like attack post combat, pay two for my 3/4, put counters on my
on your
Scion, right? I mean, there's like corner cases, but just as a mana dork, it's fine. It's fine to good, and then it has occasional extra utility.
Yeah, this card scales really well. This is a Spencer card, right? Like, this is a card that you want just, that you want Copycat Combo to be banned because of. So
it's just a good Magic card, right? I don't think this takes a lot of work to be good, and it's always going to be at least okay.
Yeah, I give this card a B+. I don't think it's in the A range, like, because it's going to be a role player more often. But like, this will change how you build your decks. But not be, it's not going to be like, it's not going to be like the best card in Standard, right? So I give it a B+.
Yeah, the only way I could see this card not seeing as much play as you might hope would be if for somehow Liliana Last Hope got really popular again. Because entering as a 0/1 is going to look pretty bad there.
Sure. Sure.
But I expect this card to see a ton of play. And I think like B to B plus, it's like a very good role player.
Yeah, this card is tied with Hazoret, and Hazoret is the red god. Why don't you go ahead and read that?
Let's see. Hazoret is, I believe,
it's red three
and
a
three and a red. Okay, yep. Three and a red for a five. It's the green one that's two and a green. All right, three and a red for a 5/4 indestructible haste. Can't attack or block unless you have one or fewer cards in hand, and you can pay three. So two and a red, discard a card. Hazoret deals two damage to each opponent.
So I did not get this card when I saw it the first time. And since playing with the card, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, this is a card that makes me want to play Noose Constrictor.
What?
If we're going to go down, you know.
You can just play it in a red aggro deck.
Sure. I wanted to, you know, say something about Noose Constrictor while I still had the chance. But no, this card is really good. And especially as the game goes on, he scales really well. Like, this is a really good top deck. And it also, like, just turning all of your extra garbage into shocks is, like, quite a good ability. I mean, this is the guy you want to top deck after your opponent fumigates you, right?
Yeah, there have been many games in testing where, like, I just play this on four and attacked with it. And that is not fair.
Yeah, like, or like, I mean, and there are going to be games too where, like, yeah, where this guy gets played on four and attacks, or even if he can't attack on four, like, if you take haste off of a 5/4 indestructible, if your opponent can't answer him, like, he will empty your hand on his own eventually, right?
Yeah, and he'll just kill
him. He's like, going to kill your opponent, right? Like, right. You have to get him off the table.
Yeah, so huge card. I give this card, I'm gonna give this card an A-. I didn't get it until I played with it. I was like, oh, that second ability is gonna be so hard to activate. But like, there are some cards in the set. There's the 4/3 for two that lets you discard a card, like, lets you being you have to do it. But like, trust me, when you're playing 4/3s for two mana and you have Hazoret coming up, like, you want to be discarding cards. And like, if they're fiery tempers, you're even happier. So
right, yeah, like, I definitely think there's a lot of potential for this guy in any of these kind of quick beatdown decks. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it an A-, dude. Like, I think that this will change the format, like, for the better, actually.
Yeah, just this kind of card having haste, I think you don't, like, realize how unbeatable this is going to feel until it happens to you.
Yeah.
But, like, there are going to be a lot of decks that maybe only have, like, four cards in their entire 75 that can actually kill this.
Yeah.
You'll have, like, Cast Out or Grasp, and that's it. Yep. And it's really hard to just invalidate a 5/4.
And like, here's especially
in the first three or four turns of the game.
I kind of want to touch on the Grasp conversation too, because Grasp is going to be like one of the cards that you have to use early against their aggressive creatures. So like, that's not a good thing to have be one of your only answers against this card, right? Because like, you because you can't like be like, well, I have to save my grants for Hazoret, because like you're getting attacked by huge giant cheap creatures. Or right. or little tiny fast aggressive creatures. Either way, like you're.
I mean, it's like saying dies to Doomblade, except it's dies to a specific Doomblade, right? Like, yes, I get that he doesn't just win every game that you play him in. That, you know, he costs 4 mana. That would be unreasonable. But a card could be really good and still die sometimes.
Yes, most of them do.
Right, that's totally fine. But I think, like, this is a guy that may make you lean more towards... He's good enough that I think it would make you lean more towards Grasp of Darkness than maybe you had in the past. Because you don't want to just play a deck that literally can't kill this guy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're not beating this card if it stays on the table with any regularity.
Coming up next, we have the Cycle Lands. So we have allied color lands that enter the battlefield tapped, and you can pay 2 to cycle them. I think these cards are pretty decent. Like, I think that once Copycat gets banned, they'll all see a reasonable amount of play, and I think that they're a B. I don't think that any of them... I don't think that it favors any color combination over the others. I think the Scrylands kind of taught us that. All of them saw a ton of play, and I think these are the same.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, like, how do you feel about these in monocolored decks? Or playing limited numbers of them where, like, only one color is on in a two-color deck.
Huh.
Because I think those are the most interesting cases. Like, they're obviously good if they're just a tap land that can cycle and it makes both your colors. That's, like, clearly good enough.
Yeah, So like, would a mono green deck play a Scattered Groves? I don't know. Maybe it depends on the mono green deck.
I think one of the really interesting things about
mono blue decks would play them, right? Like,
yeah, oh for sure. I think one of the really interesting things about building decks in this format is that, like, these lands, it's not just going to be a straight consensus like battle lands were a lot of the time, where there was like a strictly correct way to build a lot of these mana bases. Mm-hmm. I think some of it is going to just be preference. And I think these cards are, like, pretty interesting to play with and build decks with. And that's kind of awesome.
Yeah. I think these cards are a B plus B. Like, they're just going to see play and they're going to be good. You're going to play a lot of them. You're going to see a lot of them, I think. So,
These are really solid. They remind me a lot of, like, temples.
Yep. Coming in in fourth place.
I think fifth place still.
Oh, fifth place. I was just going to skip it. Go ahead.
So we have Nissa in fifth place. It's Nissa Artisan. What is the full Nissa's name?
Do you have the set memorized? Are you, like, not even pulling things up? You're just saying words.
What most of the cards do. It's Nissa Steward of the Elements. Okay. Yeah, Steward of Elements.
Yeah, it's X green blue for a Planeswalker that comes into play with X loyalty. You have a +2 to scry to, a 0 to look at the top card of your library. If it is a land card, put it on the battlefield. And if it is a... Is it a creature card? I don't even remember.
Yeah, if it's a land card or a creature card with CMC less than or equal to the number of loyalty counters, you may put that card on the battlefield. And then its ultimate is -6 on tap, up to 2 target lands you control. They become 5/5 elemental creatures with flying and haste until end of turn. They are still lands.
So when I first read this card, I didn't realize that they were until end of turn.
So you're just like, sure, I cast it for 8 and then kill you 2 turns from now? Every game? So good.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, this card's busted, like, busted wide open.
I mean, that's still a powerful modal ability, right?
It is.
Tenyu is, you know...
For 8 mana, too. It's, like, pretty cheap. I think this card, I started, when I first read it, I was like, busted. Then I realized I didn't do that. Then I read it again. I was like, probably not playable. Then I read it again. I was like, well, the first two abilities interact with each other really well.
I want to try Nissa in some decks with Vizier of the Menagerie. Those cards feel like they interact really, really well.
Yeah.
Being able to plus to put a creature on top and then also being able to look at the top so you never, like, zero and get nothing.
Yeah,
it's
like a Domirate interaction, right? With Courser of Crucifix.
Right. So just like you're never like just actually not getting any value.
Yeah, I'm gonna give this card. like a B minus. Like, I think it'll be like a fun card that we'll see a little bit of play, but that's about it.
Yeah, I would say about the same, with the caveat that, you know, could obviously be wrong. This is a really hard card to evaluate. There are like a lot of parts of this that are very much unlike basically any other Planeswalker ever.
Yeah.
Like, it's really hard to evaluate how valuable like being curve filling is. I don't know. This is a really tough one for me.
Yeah. I actually want to go back to the cycle lands really quick. I actually think some of them, like the red green one, are actually modern playable because of decks like Scapeshift. So I actually would rate that one higher, but.
Okay. That's interesting. Do you see those seeing play with like Life from the Loam at all, or just.
Oh, that's interesting too. I hadn't thought about that. It kind of depends.
Maybe. That feels kind of slow in my head as I say it, but you never know how formats will change, right? I mean, modern could easily slow down a little bit.
Let's go to the next card we have coming in at number 4. We have Ronos or Ronaz. Is it Ronaz, Ronos? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It has to be Ronaz, right? Because it's an A. Anyway, this
I wouldn't call it Ronas. That's the only thing.
Well, thank you, Michael. Ronaz the Indomitable is 2 and a green for a 5/5 death touch indestructible creature. It can't attack or block unless you control another creature with power 4 or greater. It has an activated ability of 2 and a green. Another target creature gets +2/+0 and trample until end of turn. Michael, I know you don't like this card.
So I tried it very limited initially, and I don't think I had it in a very good shell. I have played it a little bit since, and also since they spoiled the 1 in a red 4/3. And it plays really well with that guy in particular.
Mm-hmm. I see this card as very similar to Nylea, like where it's pretty easy to turn on. It's like a nice one of in your deck to get through like the last points of damage. And that's kind of it, right? Like, it's this card to me is like the definition of a C. It's just a role player in your deck, in the right deck, and that's about it.
I think costing 3 makes this like potentially actually pretty frustrating to play against, in the same way that like the red one can be. Just this guy just does not get blocked very well, and I think this is a lot easier to turn on than Nylea.
Yeah.
So like where I would say like the white one is probably...
It turns itself on, right? Where like you activate this and it's usually going to be on.
Right. Where so like Nylea especially, the biggest... I don't think Nylea was a bad card, but there were so many other things you could be doing with Devotion to Green that like just playing a stompy deck wasn't really high on the list. But like I think this costing 3 and the fact that there are multiple 2-drops I can already think of that are turning this on, like...
Right away.
This card is scary.
Yeah.
I mean, if your opponent activates this and it then attacks with both, like, you're just probably dead.
I find that so interesting, because, like, I see it as, like, the kind of card that I want to just be in my deck, but not a card that, like, all right, this is my deck.
Well... The question with these really is, how many of them can you actually play? And I sort of have the same question about Hazoret. I'm not sure that you can really play 4 of either.
No, I think the answer is 3 for Hazoret, 2 for this.
Okay. So you think because Hazoret discards extra Hazorets?
Yeah, that's a huge part of it.
The flip side, though, is that I think this card is actually easier to turn on than Hazoret a lot of the time.
Like the only way that you're not turning on your Hazoret is you have too many lands in your hand, and you were going to lose those games anyway. Hazoret's not going to help you with that.
Right. I mean, what? Basically, if you play a 2-drop into this, you're attacking for 10.
Okay.
Just straight up on turn 4.
That's true. That's a good point.
Right. And I mean, you can also use it to like threaten blocking in the same way, potentially holding up other combat tricks. You get to play Blossoming Defense for free, which is also going to turn it on every time, right? Like we're playing Blossoming Defense in a deck playing this card. I don't know. I've kind of come around on this guy a little bit, but okay. It's hard for me to tell. I haven't played enough games to know like what the numbers look like.
Sure. I'm going to stick
just,
with
just my... Just that sequences, I think this guy's better than Nylea.
Okay. I'm going to stick with my like C grade. I think that it's like just going to be a role player in some decks. That's, and it's going to be pretty good as that role player.
Yeah. I think this card is... I don't think it's quite as good as Hazoret, but I think it's very close.
Okay.
All right. So I'd probably lean more B.
Okay. Gideon is next. Man, the tribal Gideon, right? No, not really.
Yeah, we can play Gideon Tribal. So good.
Gideon of the Trials, not Gideon of the Tribal, is white one for a Planeswalker Gideon that comes into play with 3 loyalty. You can plus one it. Until your next turn, you prevent all damage the target permanent would deal. Zero. Until end of turn, it becomes a 4/4 Gideon stuff. And zero, create an emblem that as long as you control a Planeswalker named Gideon, you can't lose the game. I want to start off by saying every person who said this stops Volokut, you are a very strange person. I don't know very many games where this would have stopped me winning with Volokut.
Yeah, I mean, if you play it on turn 3 and then...
Target the Volokut in play? Why is the Volokut in play?
Well, you can zero it and then just plus it a bunch of times, I guess. And then you have to deal more damage. I don't know. It doesn't seem very good in that context. They're talking about it's plus one.
They said it's plus one stops Volokut, and I was like, come on.
I mean, it stops a Volokut if your opponent just plays it.
Yeah, and then...
They scape shift that one away. Yeah. Yeah, that seems like some wishful thinking. But I still think this card is pretty good.
I do too. I think this card plays very well with standard.
Yeah. I don't really like this card that much in the aggressive decks, but I like this card a lot as like pseudo Oblivion Ring on 3.
Okay.
And then when you fumigate, it either locks down vehicles that are getting you too low, or it just becomes a 4/4 and punches your opponent.
Yeah.
If you get to a really low life total, you can also sort of time walk them by embleming.
Well, not really, right? Because like, if you are too far behind, that doesn't really work.
It depends on the board state, but I'm sure you will be able to do that at least every once in a while.
Sure. I think the card is like fine. I think the card is pretty good. It's something that I would not be ashamed to have in my deck in any way, shape, or form. I think that it's kind of boring Here's the thing, is I do think it's interesting that you could consider playing this in a control deck, which you haven't been able to do since Gideon Jura, but I also think that it fits okay into the aggro decks.
But it's not as good in aggro as Gideon Ally, and it's not as good in control as Gideon Jura, right?
So you have this sort of awkward. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would give this card a B+. I don't think that I'm going to see this as a 4 of in any kind of decks. I think that it's really good at the job to be done for this card, but that's kind of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I feel like I think this card is more of a control card than an aggro card. I think the plus has to be good for this card to be very good.
Oh, probably. I have played it in some aggro decks, and it's actually really good in the aggro mirror. Because it like turns off something, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, and I mean getting the 4/4 is like big enough that it's not nothing. It's more like in all the aggro decks that can support double white, I want to play Gideon Ally of Zendikar, and I don't really think they play very well together.
No, they do play well together, right? You make an emblem with this one, they attack this one, you play the other one.
I mean, were they going to beat you if they couldn't kill your Gideon anyways? Probably not.
Oh, man.
You don't legitimately think they play well together, right?
No. I mean,
it's just awkward. Like,
here's the thing.
Kithian of the Trials. I think it would be perfectly playable in aggro.
Here's the thing, though, is that the fact that it is cheaper means that there's going to be some number of aggro decks that still would rather play this.
Sure, just because it's a 3-drop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this card is like. It's like fine in those decks. I don't know that it's really that. It's mostly a 3-mana 4/4.
Yeah.
Which is.
But like all of those have seen play, so.
Yeah, so right, but I mean, if we're talking about seeing play versus like,
Right, that's
I think
why
you're
it's a
kind
B,
of,
right? Not an A. Yeah.
yeah, I feel like this card is really solid, but I'm having a hard time seeing how this card is going to be oppressive.
Coming in at number two, we have Liliana. Liliana is three and a black and a black, so five mana. Did you like how I did
Three and a black and a black.
it that way? It comes into play with five loyalty. You can plus one to create a 2/2 zombie creature token and mill the top two cards of your deck. Or you can pay minus three to return a creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It is a zombie in addition to its other types, and you can minus seven to destroy all non-zombies. So I was listening to another podcast, and they were like, "This card is strictly worth the Nobnixilis," and I was like, "What? This card pluses to protect itself."
It's just not very similar to
It's first of all, it's
Obnixilis.
not similar, and it does something. I mean, yeah, like, I guess that's the same thing. It does something completely different.
It's not like I don't think it's fair to say that it's just like better than Obnixilis, but they're not very similar outside of costing three and two black.
Like it, yeah. I'm a huge fan of this card. This card is, I mean, like I've paid five mana to reanimate things before, so, like.
Yeah, no, and I mean being able to just play it onto kind of an empty board, like if you don't really have a lot going on and just like the plus
Pump it
kind
out,
of feeds the
dudes.
minus.
Yeah, it's really solid. It like feeds whatever game plan. Like, I actually don't know whether it matters what kind of mid-range game plan you have with this card. It's gonna fill it.
Sure,
Like,
reanimating anything, right? I mean, we can
right.
reanimate a Gear Hulk of some sort, we can reanimate an
Ishkanah,
Ishkanah, yeah, all that kind of
it
stuff
like
is pretty
feeds
powerful.
Ishkanah while putting Ishkanahs into your graveyard. Like, the card is just good. Like,
Yeah, I don't think you want to play a ton of these because they're kind of
no.
clunky,
It's
but
kind of like
it
that
feels
two
like
of three of
a
range
really
if like
good
you
two
really
of.
want
Yeah,
it in that
a really
spot.
good two of.
Yeah.
You're never
Like,
going to ultimate this either, right? The ultimate
oh,
is just like
absolutely.
not really
And
that
you're
much
no,
of a threat.
there are gonna be match there could be matchups you're like plus 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 minus, right? Like
I think it's going to be so rare that the minus three doesn't just handle whatever the board is.
The other thing to think
Doesn't
about
have
is
any
like
like
if you're
plus
sitting there
necessarily.
plussing this, making two twos, how are those two twos not getting outclassed to the point where you want a minus, which is another important part.
Yeah, that so my main thought is like we're going to use the plus one to try to hit something two minus three, but generally there's very few scenarios where I can actually get to seven and then untap with it on seven and minus seven and want to minus seven.
Right. Yeah, I don't have anything else to say on this one other than it's sweet. Like it's a fun, sweet planeswalker. I'm yeah.
I like this one because it's a little bit different, right? It
Yeah.
doesn't follow the exact same mold of like every five mana planeswalker we've seen recently, which is like plus draw a card, minus kill something.
Yeah. I'm a fan. I think this card will see play and it'll be really cool. I would give this card a B, maybe a B minus.
I always think more like B plus. I don't know that you're gonna play a lot of this card, but I think you're gonna both lose to and win a lot of games with this card.
Okay. All
This
right.
card is like a really good top deck.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, if you were in a grindy game and you rip this, your opponent better kill it because it's gonna, they have like a turn,
You have to remember, there was probably a
maybe.
world where this was reanimating Emrakuls inside of playtesting, too.
Sure. The old, you know,
So.
13-13 flying trampler. And it's a zombie now, man.
It's a zombie Eldrazi, the worst kind of Eldrazi.
It's more of an honorary zombie. I don't know that it's, you know, an
All
official
right.
zombie.
So everybody in chat already said what number one is. So can we just end the show?
So number one is cast out.
This has got to be the most overrated card, probably in the history of Magic.
So you think this card is bad?
No, it's like a fine two of. And like it maybe in some decks it's a four of, but like
I think this card is
maybe.
mostly a four of.
Like, oh, what? Have you cast it yet?
I think in control decks, this card is really good.
Like, it's competing with Glimmer of Genius in your four drop slot, like, very heavily. And, like, there are going to be decks that, like, you just can't afford to have your mana cost, your removal spells cost this much. Like, I have cut it from a 4F to a 3 deck, 3 of in a lot of my decks.
Interesting. I've just found that like it sort of resolves itself, right? If you're playing a game where too expensive, then it just turns into something else.
Here's the problem with that is that I don't want to cycle my O-ring. Like ever. There's like I haven't had a time where I'm like, I guess I'm gonna cycle this because it's gonna be bad. It's like, what if I'm not gonna discard a removal spell in my control deck for a random card? Like it's just not gonna happen.
So then I don't know. I mean I wonder then if that comes down to play pattern a little bit and that it's maybe not just sort of a strange card that we haven't seen a lot of things that work quite like this one before.
Are you cycling this card a lot?
I have been.
Interesting. Maybe I need to cycle it more because like to me, I'm like staring at my hand. Right. And it's like, I could cycle this, but like the opportunity cost of cycling, it seems really high.
So it depends on like, exactly how many removal spells you're playing, right? What the mix of removal spells is. What I would say is that you can just play more of these if you feel like it's, you know, like you want two of them. Maybe we're kind of on the same page. It's just that I'm a lot more willing to cycle it.
Well, I mean, yeah, that could be true. Like the thing is if I'm willing to cycle it and like, then it probably becomes a four of, right? Because at that point it's like, I
found that to be true with a lot of the cycling cards in general, just that like there's something that's bad about them sometimes. In this case, cost, in the four spikes case, you know, it's a four spike.
Oh man, have you played that card?
Yeah, I have a little bit.
It's been really bad for me.
It depends on the matchup. I'm not sure that's a card I'm play a ton of.
Yeah, I think I'm lower on all of the cyclers than I started with. And like the thing is that historically, like cycling for one mana is just really good, right? You kind of said it, right? It fixes itself. But I just haven't found that to be true with Cast Out. And like having this be the number one rated card in the set just it's just aggressive. Like I think that the card is good. And I'd probably give it a B, but just on power level alone, but I don't know that it's. I don't think this will be a format defining card.
I wonder how much a card like this can be a format defining card.
Right, this card could just never be an A ever. Just like no matter what,
it's how, just not a splashy enough effect, right? Right. I mean, it's like it's just like you can't read Oblivion Ring an A.
Right, unless its effect is when this card is destroyed or like when this part of the card is put into the graveyard from anywhere, create a 2/2 Drake, right? If that's what this card did, where if you cycled it, you also got a 2/2 Drake, and then when it died from them getting their creature back, you got a 2/2 Drake. Yeah, this card would be format defining, but like
this card goes up or down a lot based on how the cycling payoffs go, right?
Yes, that's true too. And the thing is like, it also do you want your Drakehaven deck to be a white deck, or do you want it to be like a Grixis deck because you have more cycle lands? So that also kind of depends.
Right, or do you want to play this in a deck with Traverse the Ulvenwald because you now get an enchantment that can go, right? I mean,
yeah, and I've seen that.
I like the flexibility.
Decks, and I like that too. But in those decks, it's not going to be a 4 of in those decks either. That's the thing. It's like, I don't know.
Right, but if we're giving it credit for sort of getting into all these different styles of decks, I mean, at least that's my impression of this card, that there are a lot of decks that I will try this card in.
Yeah.
Relative to some of the others. And it's a little more... It's a little more of a real card than like a cycling land.
Oh, that's true.
Right. Where like, I mean, if we're talking, but if that, we're just going to like rank them by what cards.
But that also gives it a cost for cycling, right? Like you're like not cycling away something fake. You're cycling away like a real card in your deck that you put in your deck for a specific reason, right? You did not put Cast Out in your deck to be cycled. I don't believe that. Like, I don't believe that at all.
Right. But I think that cycling for one lets you adjust the game plan on the fly a little bit more, basically.
Sure.
Just that there's more wiggle room to sort of say, I don't think this is what I need, or I don't think this is good enough, or I really need something else, right? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to give the card a B minus.
I would give this a B plus, and that's about the highest grade I could give it.
Okay.
I think realistically.
Overall, what do you think of Bumblecat? Are you excited?
I am. Assuming that Four Color Sealy is no longer a deck, I think this could be... A lot of these cards look interesting, and it's hard for me to tell what's good, which is pretty fun. If Four Color Sealy is still a deck, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that adding Cast Out to that makes Traverse really, really good in it. And
I actually was thinking that the other day. I was thinking to myself, like, if it doesn't get banned, I feel like adding Cast Out to the deck is really powerful because it makes it so you can play something closer to, like, the Ben Friedman version with not a lot of opportunity cost.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so my assumption is that that'll, you know, get taken care of. But
that's a deck that I would want to cycle this card in a lot, too. Like, there are going to be matches where, like, you just are happy to cycle that, so.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so that is it for our constructed set review. Thank you all to all of our patrons who submitted their top 25 list, so we got to talk about those cards. You can go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show. You know, we're $30 away from our next Patreon goal. So that's super awesome. Just go to patreon.com/ccmtg to check that out. Don't forget that you can join the Facebook group. It's actually in the show notes of the show, and chat with other people who are trying to get better at Magic just like you. And yeah, that is going to be it, I think. You know, you can join the Discord channel and the clan as well. The Discord channel, you just ask me for the link. I'll get it to you. And the client, you can just message me on MTGO at Spencer13Dev, and I'd be happy to add you. Michael, what did you learn this week?
Well, I learned that I'm going to have to cast out against Spencer.
People misunderstand the word overrated. Something can be really good and overrated.
Yeah, but I'm gonna have to cast out so many times that you can't say it anymore.
The Beatles, and we're gonna
have to listen to a playlist of the Beatles while we do it.
The Beatles are very good and the most overrated thing of all time. That two things can be true. So
and what else? Let's see.
You're gonna throw lemon starburst at me while we do it?
Yeah. Oh man, it's the dream.
The chat is asking for honorable mentions. The card that got
just name a card that you like in this set that
didn't get on the list
that didn't yeah
oh that
yeah,
fourth
just name a card that you like
that fourth the, really good.
Yeah, I think that guy's really good.
Dread Wanderer, I've played a little bit with the red cartouche. Hammerhand, man, like, what?
Yeah, the real Magic card. I also really like Shefet Monitor.
Oh yeah, that was on my list.
I don't know quite the right way to. I haven't figured out the right number balance, you know, what I'm supposed to do with it yet. But that card seems really good to me.
Yeah. Aven Mind Sensor makes their Marvel only hit for 4 instead of 6.
Oh man.
Oh no, it doesn't do that at all because they don't search. Never mind.
I mean, then you would have just felt really unlucky when they hit Ulamog. So it's actually a good thing that, you know. That it doesn't do that. Think about all the feel bads.
This week I learned that nobody understands what the word overrated means, apparently. So thank you everybody for watching. Don't forget to check out our sponsor at Oasis Games. Check out patreon.com/ccmtg. And we will see you guys all next week on Monday at 10 p.m. Eastern live. So thank you and goodbye. You have to say goodbye for them to see you, remember, Michael?
All right, right, right. Yes, goodbye.
Magic, magic, magic.